My sermon today I titled, Beloveds, by our baptisms, we are adopted. So there's some questions. It's an interactive thing. You can just raise your hand. You don't have to say anything out loud, but just, who here remembers their baptism? For many of us here raised in the United Church of Christ, Roman Catholicism, Orthodox traditions, Lutheranism, Presbyterian, Methodist, Episcopal, and many more Christian traditions, baptism is something that happens as an infant. There are a few here who baptized their children when they were older, and it looks like from this room that many of you had what we call a believer's baptism, when you were old enough to make a decision to take Christ into your life, and you chose to become a Christian through the act of baptism. During an infant baptism, we ask the parents and godparents, if there are any, to make promises to care for the child and teach the way of Christ. We also ask the church and the family of the child to help raise and instruct the child. We believe that it takes a village to raise a child, and the village church has a special role in nurturing and assisting the child as they grow. Baptism is a sacrament where we celebrate the grace of God. Whether you can't remember a sprinkle from a baptismal font, were baptized in a full immersion tank, or you went down to a river, or you were down at Sandy Neck in the icy cold waters of Cape Cod Bay, your baptism was a renaming. When you are baptized, God calls you beloved. You are forever and ever chosen by God. Nothing you do can take away God's naming and claiming of you as God's beloved child. Rachel Held Evans writes, whether you meet the water as a baby squirming in the arms of a nervous priest, or as an adult plunged into a river by a revivalist preacher, you do it at the hands of those who first welcome you to faith. The people who have or will introduce you to Jesus. In baptism, writes Will Willimon, the recipient of baptism is just that, recipient. You cannot very well undo your own baptism. It's done for you, to you. It's an adoption, not an interview. I love how Rachel described our Protestant founders, Martin Luther's struggles with faith and grace. It is said that when Martin Luther would slip into one of his darker places, which happened a lot, the dude was totally bipolar, he would comfort himself by saying, Martin, be calm. You are baptized. I suspect his comfort came not from recalling the moment of baptism itself, or on relying on baptism as a magical charm, but in remembering what his baptism signified, his identity as a beloved child of God. Because ultimately, baptism is naming. When Jesus emerged from the waters of the Jordan, a voice from heaven declared, "This is my son, whom I love. With him, I am well pleased." Theologian Nadia Boltz-Weber, a good Lutheran, nuances the meaning of baptism with this tweetable observation. The good news is that you are a beloved child of God. The bad news is you don't get to choose your siblings. She says it like she sees it. That means our siblings can look nothing like us. They may like different political parties, watch different TV news programs, live across the globe. They are the ones we don't want to live to love who live next door to us and let their dog come into our yard and attack our precious puppy who is an 8-year-old and not up for the fight. That would be personal problems, not your problem. God calls us beloved. God renames us. God is the one saying whose we are. We are beloved. Now, some people wonder if one baptism is enough. The short answer is yes. Whatever way you are baptized is enough. You were renamed, beloved at that moment, whether it was an infant baptism or a believer's baptism. Historically, in the early Roman Catholic Church, baptisms were held on Easter morning when it was still dark. The newly converted Christians knelt naked in the waters of the baptistry. Men were separated from the women during baptism. The believer died to one life, was submerged into the baptismal waters, and rose again into new life and had a new Christian name. The believer renounced Satan and began a new life. I love how Rachel translates that historical experience for us modern Christians. This is Rachel. Now, I'm as uncomfortable as the next Honda driving, NPR listening, New York Times progressive with the notion of exorcising demons. When I get to these stories in the New Testament, I'm inclined to take the sophisticated approach and assume the people who had demons cast into them were healed of mental illness, or let's say epilepsy, or something. Which, when you think about it, simply requires exchanging one highly implausible story for another. Where God calls the baptized beloved, demons call her addict, slut, sinner, failure, fat, worthless, faker, screw up. Where God calls her child, the demons beckon, rich, powerful, pretty, important, religious, esteemed, accomplished, right. It is no coincidence that when Satan tempted Jesus after his baptism, he began his entreaties with, "If you are the Son of God." We all long for someone to tell us who we are. The great struggle of the Christian life is to take God's name for us, to believe we are beloved, and to believe that is enough. So whatever your name is, whatever demons haunt you, telling you that you are not good enough, smart enough, rich enough, kind enough, talented enough, loved enough, worthy enough, stop. Stop. Draw in a deep breath. Exhale that negativity. Draw in a second breath saying, "I am." Exhale enough. Inhale, "I am." Exhale, "Beloved." Beloveds, you are enough. We are enough whether there are 40 in worship or 20. We are enough when the church is standing room only for high holidays and filled with a few as we remember Christ's death on Holy Thursday. Rachel had a lot to say about what the church should do about being relevant. She wrote, "Everyone's got an opinion these days about why people are leaving the church. Some wish to solve the problem by making Christianity a little bit more palatable. You know, cut out all the weird stuff, mystical stuff about sin, demons, and death and resurrection, and replace it with self-help books, or politics, or theological systems, or hip coffee shops. But sometimes I think that what the church needs most is to recover some of its weird. In the ritual of baptism, our ancestors acted out the bizarre truth of the Christian identity. We are a people who stand totally exposed before evil and death and declare them powerless against love. There's nothing normal about that." Beloveds, if we stop striving to appear normal, we can claim our truest selves. How does God see you? Live into that hopeful vision where you are beloved, who God is pleased with and loves with grace for all time. Amen.
Amen. Amen.